one. So we'll move down to number 22, Ring-Necked Pheasant Action Plan. And we'll have Alex Solom.
Thank you, members of the commission. Can everybody hear me all right?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and begin.
All right. I'll have Chris or the appropriate folks pull up the presentation that I sent there. Otherwise, I can certainly share my screen as well.
Why don't you just run it, Alex? You're good.
All right. Just give me a second here. Share screen. All right. Can everybody see my screen yet, or is it still?
We cannot see your screen.
Okay. No. Man, you think I'd get used to this Zoom after the past 3 years, but all right. How about now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay, let me scroll up to the beginning of the screen. So thank you, members of the commission. I, as Secretary Roebling, I am Alex Solom, Senior Upland Game Biologist, located in the Huron office. I'm here today to present information for our Ringneck Pheasant Action Plan. This is a draft that encompasses 2024 to 2028. It includes objectives that were trying to achieve, goals, just weighted measurable goals that we can help with pheasant management in the state for the next 5 years. So first I'll start off obviously with a little bit of introduction, with pheasants. I like to call it Pheasants 101. I do a lot of, presentations at SDSU, just kind of with the ecology and that sort of stuff, getting students familiar with it. In order to really understand how we should properly manage these species, we do need to know their ecology, what they need, what type of things on the landscape benefit them, all that sort of stuff. And being familiar in the state, a lot of people, even though they know it's, you know, encompassed in our culture and our traditions, a lot of people are still unfamiliar with what pheasants actually do, how they function, what they need. So first of all, the first successful introduction, to South Dakota was in 1908, just north of me, kind of in that Dolan Spink County area. There was some, other introductions prior to that in the late 1900s that never really took off. So this introduction in 1908 is kind of what we deem as the start of when our population actually, you know, originated, seasons and that sort of stuff kind of formed through that subsequent area where these birds were released. They're a hardy grassland bird for, that are really accustomed to weather extremes. They can survive on the prairie here with negative temps, hot temps in the summertime. They're very hardy birds, and they do well in agricultural landscapes. And I put agricultural landscapes in quotation marks because kind of one of the best instances or examples that I ever got was from a coworker a few years ago that says, you know, these birds aren't earthworms. They don't just require dirt to survive. They need not only crop grounds, but they need idle grassland as well to nest in, to brood rear in, habitat in the wintertime, all that sort of stuff. So they do well in an agricultural system, but they still need idle grasslands to nest and to flourish. They have extremely high reproductive potential. Their average nest success is anywhere from 30 to 60%. This is pretty well documented, you know, throughout the research projects that our states have done, as well as adjacent states. Their average clutch size is around 12 to 13 eggs. You know, if we have a highly successful year based on weather conditions, these populations can really have boom and bust years. They can almost double just from 1 year to the next based on if they have the proper nesting conditions, good winters and all that sort of stuff. Weather for sure is a big interannual factor on how these populations do. Obviously, having habitat there, having good habitat there can really mitigate, you know, the extreme booms and the extreme declines in these populations. So that's why a lot of pheasant management goes to managing the habitat that's on the ground, because if any of us can control the weather, we'd have pheasants coming out of our ears every year. And like I mentioned before, idle grasslands such as CRP or Conservation Reserve Program ground, so set aside acres that may not be profitable for producers, but encompass basically idle grasslands, things that just stay normal, stay idle there throughout the course of the year, is extremely important. Historically speaking, we've had some of our best pheasant years that's correlated with lots of CRP on the landscape, particularly the mid-2000s. And one thing that is really important to note is where this CRP is placed on the landscape, where we have pheasants, that we see these really good responses with birds. So I kind of alluded to pheasant management in South Dakota already. Obviously, we need to know their ecology, what these birds need, how these birds operate. And when it comes to management in South Dakota, we basically use three proponents to manage pheasants. That includes managing habitat on public and private grounds, as well as monitoring populations through harvest surveys, hunter questionnaires, that sort of thing. And then as well as a kind of a new push with our department, access and opportunities. So giving folks the opportunity to go out there and harvest these birds, enjoy the outdoors, really kind of enjoy the culture that pheasant hunting provides the state of South Dakota. So I'll kind of get into just the basics of what I like to call pheasant management. And we like to think of this as a three-legged stool. It encompasses nesting and brood rearing habitat, winter cover, such as cattails, well-placed shelter belts, the things that really offer thermal cover in a really hard January in the middle of South Dakota. Last year was a perfect example. And then obviously food. And the food obviously comes from just waste grain, food plots, well-properly placed food plots, just kind of everything that eastern South Dakota and parts of central and western South Dakota have to offer. The three-legged stool is obviously a really good example for pheasant management. Anytime you take away one of these three components or one of these three legs, that stool becomes very unstable. So, or essentially can tip over. So it's a good analogy on how populations can respond from one year to the next. If we take away one of these components in their habitat management, a lot of bad things can happen. Getting into monitoring populations, we do this through hunter harvest surveys. Every year we annually survey approximately 15,000 residents and 15,000 non-residents. This small game survey is sent to folks with small game or folks that have purchased a small game license. They're selected randomly, and they're sent questions that ask total harvest, number of days hunted, harvest distribution, hunter satisfaction, as well as when these birds were harvested, so we could get a pretty good idea of hunting pressure throughout the season. You can see here, just historically, we've tracked it in the last 40 years or so. We've had some really good years, some down years, and a lot of that does have to go back to habitat availability on the landscape, plus weather. And we track this both through resident and non-resident license holders. So getting into habitat and access, one thing that's really important with working with private landowners, especially in the state of South Dakota, is partnerships with other NGOs such as Pheasants Forever. We have Pheasants Forever biologists located in numerous FSA offices throughout the state. These individuals help promote federal programs such as the Conservation Reserve Program, implement them into producers, take the most profitable acres, put them to adjacent grass or to idle grassland to hopefully, not only benefit the producer economically for their bottom line, but it also responds really well for wildlife populations. Some of the things that we've really pushed in the last few years is the James River CREP, as well as the new Big Sioux River CREP. Again, this is just a conservation program tied to CRP, where we essentially lease the hunting rights to these parcels with the permission of the landowner, where they get an additional incentive to open it up to public hunting. This provides a great opportunity to not only showcase what habitat can really do for these birds and how they can respond, but it also gives people a really good place to go and hunt and enjoy the outdoors. When it comes to private lands for our department in particular, we have 12 private lands biologists. Obviously, most of you guys are probably familiar with some of the showcases that we've done in the past. We offer cost share assistance plus technical assistance for numerous programs, including food plots, wetland restorations, habitat fencing, grazing plans, grass seedings, grazing systems, as well as woody habitat. So now I'll kind of give a 10,000 foot view of the management objectives and strategies that we're hoping to really implement in the next 5 years for the duration of this plan. I'll have you guys refer to the document that was sent out, the actual plan itself. I won't get into details on the strategies in particular. I don't want to sit here and read them off to you guys. So I'll have you guys read those. I'll just touch on them briefly in this presentation. We do have our first objective that we're trying to achieve is obviously providing hunting access to quality pheasant habitat on both public and private lands. By doing this, we hope to inform hunters, or in order to achieve this, we hope to essentially make a good web-based app to inform hunters on areas to go, what's available for them, the amount of public land, what type of land's out there, bird numbers, all that sort of stuff. So it's a goal of ours to essentially make a hunt tool to help ease the load from, you know, having just to call a CO, call a biologist asking where to go, and they can make these decisions properly and take everything into account, including how much private land's available or how much public land's available, as well as just kind of all the amenities that come there. Again, we have another strategy of annually adding about 5,000 acres of private land for public hunting opportunity. You know, this can include walk-in areas, and then adding to our CREP program as well. We want to have a financial commitment to that, those CREP programs, not only in the James River Valley, but also the Big Sioux watershed. Again, it provides awesome opportunity for folks to go out there and harvest these birds, plus the habitat there to actually produce them. Moving on to our second objective, this one is to promote the establishment, restoration, and enhancement of high-quality habitats critical for pheasants on state-owned GPA areas. So we have, obviously, we have ground that our public land managers manage for the purpose of producing pheasants, deer, all types of wildlife, as well as providing opportunity for folks to go out there and hunt. As new information becomes available, we're always able to track or to tweak our management plans for these particular parcels of ground to try to benefit not only hunters, but also the wildlife that tend to live there, produce there, all that sort of stuff. So we're essentially the strategies associated with this are giving our public land managers a little bit of guidance on how to properly manage for not only all species, but pheasants in particular. Including this is just evaluating and improving all our existing woody habitat located on these GPAs and adjusting them accordingly to improve the overall winter habitat. You know, evaluating them and see if, you know, if this shelter belt or this woody tree habitat planting that we have there, you know, could use a few more rows, doesn't provide the thermal cover that we're thinking of, or maybe it's not in the right location to really offer what we need there. It gives them the opportunity to go in there and adjust it and improve the woody habitats that's there and make it even better for pheasants for their overall survival. Also evaluate and improve current nesting and brood rearing design that we have on our GPAs. Obviously, one of our recommendations in our management plan is for managing roughly greater than 40 acres for these nesting and brood rearing habitats. One of the age-old adages for pheasant management is that these large chunks of intact grassland, blocky in shape, usually offer the best nest success, and this is where birds obviously do the best. So evaluating the grassland plantings that we have on our properties, managing them to their full potential, and then as well as using diverse grass plantings, diversity on there, so we offer not only nesting, secure nesting habitat, but also proper brood rearing habitat on the same location. In addition to this, we're also evaluating our food plot design, where these food plots are located on the landscape. Kind of a good opportunity for this is one of my counterparts in Iowa always likes to put the kitchen right near the bedroom. So making sure that these food plots, which we consider the kitchen, are next to quality roosting habitat for these birds for thermal cover, the less energy that they can expend jumping from where they tend to roost to where they tend to feed, the less energy they have to use, the less food they have to use. Not only that, but it also limits the predation that they're exposed to. Jump the gun there. We also would really want to maintain our existing partnerships with our Habitat and Pheasants Forever to fund appropriate level of habitat specialists that help us do this on the ground work on our GPAs. And we want to really, it takes a lot of work to maintain and manage these GPAs properly. And we do use conservation districts and people around the area, you know, your farmers and producers around the area to help us plant food plots, help us do grass plantings, help us spray weeds, all that sort of stuff. So we want to maintain those relationships, make sure we have good relationships with them, not only so it helps us, but it also helps them as well. And they really help lessen the burden for a lot of our private land, our public land staff in order to get this work done. The third objective is to protect and enhance pheasant habitat on private lands. you know, we're obviously going to continue to support the Second Century Initiative to promote pheasant habitat and pheasant management and raise funds through this initiative to enhance and restore pheasant habitat on private lands. We're also going to, you know, strive as a goal to have at least 1 million acres of CRP on the landscape, offering it out through South Dakota, you know, to really, you know, hopefully benefit these birds. A lot of that is, you know, tied onto commodity prices, prices for CRP. But, you know, with well-placed people, not only our private lands and positions, but using Pheasants Forever biologists as well, we can really promote this conservation program to help look at producers' bottom lines and benefit wildlife habitat and wildlife in particular on the landscape. You know, to do this, we obviously have to put these pieces of property or pieces of habitat in the right places so that these birds are going to respond to it and be smart about where we're adding CRP on the landscape. Just kind of a blanket approach of putting CRP here and there. It's obviously good. It has environmental concerns that it's addressing, but we can really use a targeted approach on, you know, where and how we put CRP on the landscape to benefit them all, looking at the nesting cover as a whole. Getting into a little bit more specific detail, especially with our private lands biologists, we have a four-year average in this action plan of the types of projects, a number of projects that we've done. It's a great program, great private lands biologists. They go out there and talk to producers, have coffee with them, help them with their day-to-day or their operations on not only for their bottom line, but as well as providing habitat for the critters that they care about on the landscape. So we want to complete at least eight wetland restoration or creation programs through the use of dense emergent vegetation, so cattail sloughs, that sort of stuff, offering more winter habitat on the landscape for these birds in case we get another winter like we had last year. We want to essentially increase our annual acres of planting grasslands by 35% to 1,200 acres annually. Again, offering good nesting and brood-rearing habitat so these birds, given the right conditions, can really, really flourish. We also want to work with our food plot cooperators and add 150 cooperators annually to at least 1,100 food plot cooperators. We're right under 1,000. So, you know, getting the word out about our food plot program, well-placed food plots, how these individuals can make their food plot placement even better on the landscape without detracting from nesting habitat, putting it near winter habitat adjacently, so we can, you know, benefit the birds mostly. And one of the cool things that we can do about this is have our private lands biologists, when they are signing up these things, evaluate the property that these folks are, you know, wanting to put food plots and give them a little bit of technical advice, say, maybe a food plot here isn't the best idea. Looks like it could get blown in with snow, won't offer the greatest food source for the birds. You know, we can maybe put it here, just kind of a better placement of food plots throughout the property that these folks are working on. And we can do this through various means, such as word of mouth, social media, media articles, all that sort of stuff. As well as we also want to increase our annual average of woody habitat cooperators by 55%. Trying to strive for more quality winter habitat on the landscape. Again, just in case we do have a few of those hellacious winters like we had last year in South Dakota, because we know those things will certainly benefit the birds. We also want to, you know, annually work with these Pheasants Forever biologists, inform them, help them in their planting as well, in their property management as well, and, you know, hold seminars if need be. Any recent or current literature that's come out that, you know, can maybe tweak some of our management designs or give us a little bit of more guidance on how we can properly manage the habitat. We're certainly, you know, want to reach out to them so that they're the best informed to make quality decisions on with the producers that they're working with as well. We also want to, so moving on to our fourth objective, we want to use and improve on current population harvests and public opinion surveys to obviously monitor these population trends as well as the economic of impact that hunting, harvest levels, and hunter satisfaction have on the landscape. It's no secret that pheasant hunting in the state of South Dakota has a huge economic impact, and we want to make sure that we continue to provide good populations out there for a lot of birds to come in harvest, or a lot of hunters to come in there and harvest birds. The happier they are, the better job that we're doing. So we want to continue to monitor that, continue to look at those levels, and make sure that on the ground habitat work that we're doing seems to be effective in doing this. And we also want to kind of annually evaluate the current surveys that we're doing and make tweaks to them, how we can annually improve them or get more information, more data that we essentially need to properly manage these birds. So that is all I have. Again, it's a 10,000 foot view of the action plan. And I will entertain any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Alex. Any questions on the ringneck pheasant action plan before us? Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alex, I had a question this past couple of weeks about what type of habitat is eligible for CREP other than CRP land, and what would the requirements be if that is possible?
Through the chair.
Yes, please.
So I am. Obviously, my familiarity with CREP is it's a tag on to Conservation Reserve Program ground, so it has to be CRP with the addition of the CREP ground, and that CREP is essentially just a tag that we as a department add an incentive to open it up to public hunting. So it has to be a CRP eligible program. And then we have certain guidelines that fit. I believe it's 40 acres minimum in size and that sort of stuff to actually do CREP. So CREP has to be CRP, but we do have other programs such as our walk-in area and things like that if the ground in particular isn't receiving federal funds for the cover that's out there.
Answers my question. Thank you.
Yep.
Any additional questions or comments? Secretary Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Alex, for the good presentation. Say real quickly, though, I do want to mention there is a new Pheasants Forever program called PATH that doesn't provide a $25 per acre incentive for public access. I know our staff are working very closely with Pheasants Forever, great public access program, and that'll hopefully even increase our private land public access opportunities here moving into the future. So we're excited about that. Pheasants Forever just launched that here in 2023. And we are the first state they launched it in, so very proud of that.
Excellent. Additional questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you for a very well done presentation, Alex.
Thank you.
We will